From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. On my bookshelf this week is a new CD from Richie Furay. The CD, Hand in Hand, is the first new album in quite a few years from this artist, who is an inductee in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. A founding member of the Buffalo Springfield, along with Stephen Stills and Neil Young, Richie Furay is also the founder of Poco, and has written some great songs, including Kind Woman, Picking Up the Pieces, and Good Feeling to Know. It's a real honor to have him here. Richie Furay, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hey, Gary, thank you very much. Nice to talk to you, man.
I caught your show a couple of weeks ago, and what a fantastic show it was. It's great to see you out there making great music.
Yeah, sweet band, man. I just love my band, and we had a great time, great audience. It was a very special evening for us. I think we all walked away saying it was our favorite show of the little tour that we did.
Oh, that's great. I also caught you playing with the Buffalo Springfield a couple of years ago. How did it happen that the Buffalo Springfield got back together after all that time?
Well, I got a call from Neil, and it was a surprise, of course. I wasn't expecting it at all. And he said, hey, I've been thinking about maybe Buffalo Springfield doing something at the Bridge School. What do you think? And I think Stephen would be up for it if you would. And so I said, yeah, sounds good to me. So, you know, Neil led the way on it, which right now, today, this is, you know, that's how I think the Springfield, you know, would get going if Neil took the lead. But that's what happened. He called us, and we said, yeah, let's do it. So we had a fun, short reunion.
Would you have wanted it to go on longer?
Well, we were supposed to, and I was given the word, you know, to let everybody know from our publicist. I was the one, because, you know, Neil wasn't going to talk to anybody, and, you know, Stephen didn't want to probably talk to anybody. And so I was given the word to take all these radio, it was like a little radio tour, I guess, you know, and you talk to all these people and tell them we're going to be doing 30 days and ba-da-da-da-da-da. And so I remember the first time I got wind of, or at least thought that, uh-oh, what are we doing here? It was when Stephen and I at Bonnaroo were doing an interview together, and I happened to mention, you know, the 30 days that were being planned, and Steve looked at me and said, what are you talking about? So it was, yeah. Anyway, after Bonnaroo, we kind of knew that it was pretty much over. I mean, we had seen each other, you know, pretty much after every show, and Bonnaroo was the last show, and literally, you know, people just went their own directions, and that was it.
When you say that today Neil would be the one to lead off, what was the dynamic like in 1965, or what year was it that the Buffalo Springfield got together?
You know, it was 65,
yeah.
Around that time, you know, I think it varies, but, well, by what I meant was the Buffalo Springfield, regardless, was Stephen's band. Stephen was the heart and soul of the band, no doubt about it. And I think today, though, because of the success that Neil has had, he kind of, you know, runs things, but just, you know, he would make the initial calls to get something going. But back in the day, there's no doubt about it, when the Springfield was just a little band out of Southern California, you know, it was Stephen's band. He was the heart and soul, and as long as he was there, I was going to be there, because, you know, there were 9 people in and out of the Springfield in a 2-year period of time, which made it very difficult for us to really get any momentum going.
Did you and Steve Stills record as a duo at one time also?
No. We were in a group called the Agogo Singers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, loving that band. We were named after the Cafe Gogo in New York City, cross street from the Bitter End. They had a better name for their group, the Bitter End Singers. I like that better. But we were the house band at the Cafe Agogo and became the Agogo Singers.
Did you guys make a record?
We did. Made a record called They Call Us Agogo Singers, and it was on Roulette Records. And it was, you know, that was the only thing. I wish we could have made the second record. I can't say that I wish we would have made the second record on Roulette, but I wish we would have made the second record, because we had a just a wonderful musical director. And if you remember the Modern Folk Quartet,
sure.
Well, what we sounded like was a nine-piece, because we were like the Serendipity Singers, the New Christy Minstrels, you know, the nine-piece, seven guys, two gals, stand-up bass, banjo, and all that. And so what we sounded like, you know, I mean, we were like, we actually played with the Modern Folk Quartet a couple times up at a place called Charlie Bates in New York City. And but our musical director just gave us that kind of a sound, and it would have been a wonderful record to make, but we never got a chance to make it.
I had a girl back one time. She had lips like cherry wine. I loved her till my head went plumb insane. But I was too blind to see. She was drifting away from me. One day she left on the morning train. And I can't help but wonder where I'm bound, where I'm bound. I can't help but wonder where I'm bound.
We're chatting with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Richie Furay. I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. It's hard to believe, looking at you, but you're in your 70s. Yeah, 71.
71.
And so your musical influences must predate rock and roll, or not. What were your earliest musical influences?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I mean, I love the rockabilly stuff, the Buddy Holly, Gene Vincent, Eddie Cochran, those kind of things, you know. But then I also liked a lot of the doo-wop singers and the harmony singers, you know. I mean, I had a very varied musical, you know. I mean, what really inspired me, and actually it was watching Ozzy and Harriet that made me say, I'm going to go out to California and I'm going to be just like Ricky Nelson, you know.
Huh.
I mean, I just loved Ricky Nelson, and that was the thing that really got me going. From a little kid on, you know, I said I'm gonna be just like him.
And you were later in a band with Randy Meisner, who played in the Stone Canyon band with Rick Nelson.
With Rick Nelson, yeah. Fact is, that was about the only time I ever met Rick. But after Randy left Poco, he joined the Stone Canyon band and met Rick at the Troubadour one night.
So the Buffalo Springfield, you were. I mean, I think you're the vocalist on 90% of the Buffalo Springfield recordings.
Well, a lot of them. You know, Stephen and Neil and I did split them up, but I sang a lot of Neil's songs. Of course, in the very beginning, I didn't even have an opportunity to get any of my songs. It wasn't until the second record that I got some of my songs recorded, Sad Memory, Child's Fame, and Good Time Boy for Dewey. But so I did sing... you know, a lot of Neil songs on the first record, and I think on the second record, I'm trying to remember if I sang any or not, but we had an interesting dynamic going. There were almost four lead singers, if you count Neil as being a lead singer, myself being a lead singer, Stephen being a lead singer, and then Stephen and I, when we were in California before the Buffalo Springfield ever got started, we sat in a little apartment that Stephen had, and we did the unison thing like John Lennon and Paul McCartney. You know, we figured that was also and it gave us really a whole other sound. But I sang a lot of the songs and certainly leads on a lot of the songs. So it was a fun time.
Conversation with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Richie Furay. When the band broke up and you formed Poco, was that something you were ready for, or would you have liked Buffalo Springfield to continue, or what?
Well, you know, with nine people in and out of the group in 2 years, you kind of knew that it had a short, you just kind of knew it was going to be short-lived. And I, as long as Stephen was there, I was going to be there. When Stephen decided it was time that he was going to call it quits, then, you know what, I was going to move on. And it just so happened that Jimmy Messina was, he was like the ninth guy in. He was the bass player that took over for Bruce and a couple other bass players along the way. And Jimmy and I became very good friends, so we would have a sense, you know, if this thing ever falls apart, let's just keep it going and let's just do another kind of music. And so we had in our mind that we would do a country, try to bring country music into rock and roll. And so it was something that, yes, was planned, if you will, but didn't know when it was going to happen. But after the second a little tour that we did with the Beach Boys, it was over, and Jimmy and I just picked up the pieces and went on from there.
Pick up the pieces.
There you go. That's what it was about.
Well, there's just a little bit of magic in the country music we're singing. So let's begin. We're bringing you back down home where the folks are happy. Sitting, picking at a grin, casually, you and me, we'll pick up the pieces. Somebody yell out at me, country music and company, kind of makes sense on a Sunday afternoon. Picnic lunches of yesterday still have a place in your heart today. Think it over.
We're talking with Richie Furay, and I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. On your new album, Hand in Hand, you've got a song all about the formation of Poco.
Uh-huh.
I love that song.
It's Thank you.
Great.
We're the
crazy.
Dreamers.
Yeah.
Stars, making rock and roll music, playing country guitars. We blaze a trail for generations to come. Yeah, we were the dreamers, just some kids having fun. And paying your dues. But when people kept coming, saying, give us some more, how could we not win? That's what we were there for. Yeah, we were the dreamers. We were the ones. The others who played that day in the sun. Now's just a shadow of days come and gone. We were the dreamers, pioneers pressing on.
You know, when I wrote this song, I didn't even set out to know what it was about. In fact, as I called my manager when I was having trouble, I had the chorus, and I sort of had a musical idea for the verses, But I called my manager and said, David, I can't get track on this. I don't know where it's going, you know. And he said, well, let me call a couple of my friends and I'll play it for them and maybe they'll come up with something. And it wasn't, I mean, as soon as we hung up the phone, I just came into my room and I just wrote it. And so I wrote those lyrics and it came out to be the story of Poco. You know, it was Poco's a very special band to me. We were kids having some fun, and music was just what it was all about. The song came out, and I really liked the song too. I thought it really captured the moment.
And Poco, what a dynamic band you were.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of the band and what we accomplished. I really feel that we set the tone for a genre of music that certainly became very popular in America and was carried on by certainly the Eagles. You know, they started off. Glenn Frey sat in my living room when I was rehearsing Poco, and so he picked up a few pointers, and I wish he'd have passed them on to me.
Well, you know, I know that Gram Parsons, for instance, felt very resentful of the Eagles, and he felt that they had stolen his ideas and turned them into commercial success. Did you have any of that kind of feeling?
No, not at all. But I did know that when I heard Take It Easy on the radio after we had released Good Feeling to Know, that basically, you know, that was it for Poco and me. You know, I just figured that it was over. But no resentment, no, my goodness sakes. All I was thinking about was creating my own music. But I did have the sense that Good Feeling to Know was going to launch Poco into that other genre, upper echelon, you know, of you know, places where we could play and would play. If you got AM radio at that time, and when it appeared that we weren't going to get the AM radio, when Take It Easy came out at the same time, you know, and was in starting to climb the charts, and Good Feeling to Know was basically just a song in passing, you know, that it was going to be over for me. But I no resentment whatsoever, man. Those guys are talented, and their success is goes without question. And I take a great pleasure in knowing that they took two of my bass players along the road.
When I need good loving, I always come home to you. You free my life. Time of the blues.
We are talking with Richie Furay. I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. Well, I never saw Poco live, but I did happen to see you with your Souther Hillman Furay band in 1973, I think it was, at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. It was a memorable night. How did that band come to be?
Well, when I realized that Poco, in my mind and my estimation, was not going to really attain the commercial success that I think we were all kind of striving for at that time, I called David Geffen, and David kind of said, well, hey, look, Chris Hillman's looking for something to do, and I got this singer-songwriter that writes these songs for the Eagles. He's maybe looking to get in a band. Maybe you guys could get them together, and we'll just put together another Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And I thought to myself, huh? it's that easy. I've been working at this for 5-6 years now, and nothing, and you're telling me we just do that. But that's how it basically got together. David kind of put it together on paper, and we got Jim Gordon and Paul Harris and Al Perkins, and away we went.
It was a solid band, and I was happy to hear you play one of the Souther Hymn and Fure songs at your concert.
Uh-huh.
Do you include that song regularly when you gig?
We have recently. We just came back this past weekend doing a kind of like a little acoustic set where I got three or four of us to go out. We don't take our bass player and drummer. Economics get a little tough sometimes. And we actually played Believe Me on this set, which is also a Souther Hymn and Fure.
Yeah, I love that. One of my favorites, Richie Fure. Love, it's in bloom, move over, give me some room.
Yeah, maybe just a little more time.
When the winter snows, melting it's spring, and who knows? I hope the sun is a shine. You and I pining for someone you love. 'Cause ain't it just about right?
Souther Hymn and Fure band, was a pleasant experience or unpleasant?
You know what? It was kind of like a mystical experience for me because there was a lot of things starting to happen in my life at that time that I had no idea was going on. Number one, you know, my wife was getting ready to divorce me, and she was, you know, I was away just all the time. I thought, you know, I'd taken care of her pretty well, and our family was doing well, and we had a nice home, and she drove nice cars and this and that and the other, but I was away, and that was beginning to bother her a little bit, and so that was one thing that was going on at the time that I had no idea about. When SHF got together, Chris wanted a guy named Al Perkins in the band, and I was vehemently opposed to having Al in the band because he had a little Jesus sticker on his guitar, and I didn't want to have anything to do with him, thinking that was going to be, you know, I'm ready for our names in lights, you know, and this guy with this Jesus sticker and all that, I don't know what it was about it at the time, but it was just like, this guy's going to stop us from becoming what we want to be. And Chris, he won out, and Al led me to the Lord, and it was a perfect timing because as my wife decided, you know, she was done with me, you know, I was kind of like lost in no man's land at the time, had I not had the Lord, you know, I think it would have been a very critical time. Praise the Lord that he brought us back together, and we are into year 49 of our marriage now.
So you stayed together.
We did stay together and have four daughters. Jesse, my baby, is the one who sang with us when you saw us at...
She's got a beautiful voice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Got a good reason for loving you. It's an old-fashioned sign. I kind of get the feeling like... you know when fell in love first time. Kind woman, won't you love me tonight?
We're in conversation with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Richie Furay. I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. And I know you've been a pastor and so forth the last few years. What was your religious upbringing?
Well, I grew up in a home where, you know, my parents were denominational Christians. We went to a denominational church. When my dad died when I was 13, kind of like fell away from church experience, and excuse me, it didn't really follow through on any more church experience until I met Al, and then Al took me to a church down in Southern California called Calvary Chapel, and there I met Chuck Smith and a bunch of my my friends, dear friends, who were pastors and who are still good friends of mine today, encouraged me in the music and in the ministry. And but my background was a Protestant, non-denominational. Well, it was a denominational church, but Calvary Chapel was a non-denominational church.
So, how has it affected you in terms of your career as a musician? I mean, you know, I think that people think, well, that's it. After Sally Hillman Furay, you vanished, and now you're back. But you actually made quite a few albums, solo albums in between, right?
I did. And like most of my albums, you know, they a lot of them have gone unnoticed, and I think there's dynamic songs on all of them. But, you know, what do you do? That's just part of life. But, yeah, Gary, when SHF broke up, my main focus was on nothing but putting my family back together. And, you know, at that point in time, then I didn't really know what I wanted to do or what the Lord wanted me to do. I thought at first I would put together the rock and roll band for God. And that's what I set out to do. You know, first of all, after Nancy and I got back together, I put together a band, and we did I've Got a Reason, Dance a Little Light, and I Still Have Dreams. And when that didn't seem to, you know, make any sense to anyone or couldn't get the kind of promotion, I mean, I Still Have Dreams even went top 40 in some places, you know, couldn't get any support from the record company. You know, I figured, you know, what do you want me to do, Lord? And that's when I just started a little church back here in Colorado called Calvary Chapel, and we, you know, that's what I put my heart and soul in at the time. And several years into that, you know, it was probably 6, 7, 8 years, a friend of mine who was at a larger church in town came and said, hey, you know, we're putting together a worship CD. Do you think that, you know, do you have any music that you'd like to contribute to it? And I said, sure, man, let's get together. We'll play you some songs. And so my partner, Scott, who's my lead guitar player, and I sat down and we started playing this guy all these songs. And he said, man, you got an album enough for your own music. Why don't we just do your own CD? And so that became In My Father's House. And then shortly after that, I did another album called I Am Sure. And those were pretty much devotional CDs. I neglected to mention Season to Change, which was in between those. But those became devotional records. And then I had a good friend down in Southern California that promoted a place called Humphreys by the Bay in San Diego, and he asked if I would come out and do a concert for him. I said, Kenny Weisberg was his name. I said, man, I haven't done concerts in 10 years. Man, what am I going to do? He said, I'll find the perfect concert for you. And so he put together a concert with Stephen Stills. And my partner Scott and I went out, and we played a little duo. And that, you know, turned into, on another occasion, one form of what became an RFB band, and then, you know, one more RFB band, and we started just doing concerts, and so that developed into what it is today. You know, we're not a full-time band, although I think we could go out and step on the stage with anybody. We play a minimum amount of concerts a year, but sure enjoy it. We're a family band, and you know, I have my daughter. Scott has his son playing bass, and then we have some other, you know, other close friends in the band. So we like to think of it as a family band, but a multi generational band as well. And there you have it. We do what we can when we can, and I record. You know, I recorded an album before Hand in Hand called Heartbeat of Love, which actually has Stephen Stills and Neil Young and Timothy B. Schmidt, Rusty Young, Paul Cotton, Kenny Loggins, Mark Volman, Jeff Hanna, you name it. I just have a bunch of my friends on that particular CD, which, you know, again, virtually has gone unheard, but maybe they'll hear about it from your show and go out and check it out on my website and see what it's all about.
Well, I hope that happens.
There you go, man. That's a little plug, isn't it?
And I hope that happens with Hand in Hand, too, because I think that is a really very, very solid piece of work.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, let me ask you one more question. And I asked you a little while ago if you had any resentments towards groups like the Eagles and so forth, but... You know, are you comfortable? Are you? Do you have the level of fame that you want when you see Neil and Steve and so forth? Are you where you want to be musically?
Musically, I am. I couldn't ask for any more. I mean, I think the songs that I've written for Hand in Hand are songs that stand up with anything I've ever done, or the Springfield's done, or Poco's ever done. I mean, I really feel that strongly. About the record, you know, we all have a mutual respect for one another. I'm very, very happy for, you know, the success that both Stephen and Neil have had. They are true dynamic icons in the world of music. Had I stayed in the music, I made a different choice than they did, you know, many years ago. And had I stayed in the business. Who knows what would have happened, but I chose my family and all over what I, you know, could have looked at as a career. The only thing that I really have, you know, just kind of, it kind of bothers me a little bit is because I never personally had the hit record, so to speak. You know, there are groups that can go out and they can make a living on the fact that they had one top 40 hit single. And, you know, I wasn't in Poco when Crazy Love came along, and Stephen, you know, is associated pretty much in the Buffalo Springfield with For What It's Worth. So it kind of limits the people. You know, I was the guy in the middle in the Buffalo Springfield, you know. I mean, you got Stephen and Neil on both sides, you know. And so I was the guy in the middle in the Buffalo Springfield. And so it's almost like when I go out, you know, a lot of people don't know who I am. And because I did drop out of the business for, you know, 7, 8, almost 9, 10 years, you know, it's been kind of like a hard road back. And all I can say is that I'm very proud of the band, again, that I have and the music that we make. And I know that when we go out on stage, you know, we deliver. It doesn't matter, you know, where we play or what we do, we deliver.
Delivering. So you haven't, you said you haven't had that hit record yet.
Well, the music business has changed so much, so maybe I should just say I haven't had the hit record. Who knows what's going to, you know, I mean, we were the dreamers. It was very interesting, you know, with Hand in Hand. I really felt I had a special product when I finished recording it. And my manager and I shopped it in Nashville at all the independents, and every one of them said, man, we love this record. We love this record. But then they would turn around in the next sentence and say, you know, but Richie Furay, he must be 70 years old. What are we going to do with a Richie Furay record, you know? And so they all turned it down, and I thought, well, I'm going to have to do this one on my own, like I did Heartbeat of Love and all the other records that pretty much I've done since I, you know, left SHF. And we were in New York playing at B.B. King's, and I was walking around working the room because I love to work the room. I love to go out and say hi to the audience and just see who's there. And it was a Monday night at B.B. King's, and I knew anybody that was there because they wanted to be there. And we had a pretty good house there that night, I will say. And I got to this very last table, and I said, hi, man, I'm Rich Frey. And the two guys said, yep, we know who you are. We're from E1, Entertainment One, and we're thinking of signing your record. I thought, well, this is pretty cool. Uh-huh. And so the way it turned out is they did, and they've been doing a really admirable job for this 70-year-old guy that got turned down by every independent in Nashville, you know. And they released We Were the Dreamers, and actually we are in the process of releasing Don't Tread on Me even right now. We've edited the song down, and they're making a video for it right now. And so I mean, usually records today, you know, they can come and go in 3 weeks, you know, and this one they've been working since March, and so I'm very happy with what they're doing, and hopefully, you know, we can you know, strike a chord in some people's lives, and you know, I think Don't Tread on Me, I think the chorus of that song ought to be played at every ballpark at the seventh inning, you know. I mean, we're the home of the brave, the land of the free, and as patriotic as this country has become, that song ought to be played, man, right there at the ballpark, don't you think?
Wandered away, said he couldn't stay, not another day. It's not a word, I just can't understand how we lost our way. Ain't ashamed to say, born in the USA, we're the home of the brave, we're the land of the free, we got a heart of
Richie Furay, thank you so much for talking about your music and spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much, man. Tell folks to come visit me at www.richiefuray.com or other multimedia places they can visit me and say hi, okay?
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes. I want to thank my guest, the legendary Richie Furay. Pick up his new album. It's called Hand in Hand. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.